It's time for Saturday Sports Talk on News Talk 1400 WDWS Champaign-Urbana, where we talk all things Illini along with other area and national sports. Join the program by calling 217-356-9397 or send a text to the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. You can also email us at talk@wdws.com. Now, here are your hosts, Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Saturday Sports Talk on this July the 14th with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly with you until 11 o'clock this morning. Mr. Tate, what do you say?
Well, we got a loaded show. That's what I'd say.
Well, we got a lot of tennis to talk about. People still buzzing about Wimbledon semifinal match number one yesterday that took 6.5 hours plus before Kevin Anderson beat John Isner. The fifth set alone took 3 hours of that time. And one of those things that if you started watching, you couldn't walk away, could you?
You know, it just occurred to me that Illinois, for one reason or another, has been the basis for several rule changes over time. You remember the Kentucky thing where they won't allow basketball hosts anymore, as Kentucky beat Illinois back in the day at home. And then you see the changes made in football that resulted directly from an Illinois game. And then now you're seeing probably it's going to be a change in tennis based on the length of that. They just got to figure out some way to get the thing over with. I mean, a 7-point tiebreaker makes sense to me, but I don't know. You just can't wear guys out like that. That's dangerous. That's like running two marathons at full speed.
We could be heading for that situation again today because Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal are still playing. They're in the fifth set now with Djokovic leading 7-6.
You know the big difference, though? This one won't go as near as long because the service isn't as dominant. The problem with the Isner match with Anderson is that neither one could if the serves were in where they wanted them, you couldn't get them back. And so one service after another held. And I noticed that the service in this match, Djokovic and Nadal, is in the neighborhood of 112, 114, 116 in there, as opposed to 130. It makes a big difference.
Well, it really does. And those guys were still pumping it out at that pace, even 6 hours or 6.5 hours.
You know, no matter how tired you are, you can always get yourself up for service. Even chasing balls is one thing, but you can always get yourself up for service.
Well, Isner was hurting. He had a wrap on his hamstring and said he had a blister on his foot. And Anderson also was feeling that, as you would, in that amount of time on the court. And this one is... This is in the second day, so these guys have had a little chance to rest. I don't know if that's good or bad.
I don't know how Anderson can come back from that. I mean, it's like you don't see, I mentioned marathon, you don't see somebody running another marathon after they just ran one, right? You just don't do it. Now, he's had two marathons already on odd days. Now he's got another day to rest and try to come back tomorrow.
26-24 was the final in the fifth set. And as we mentioned, the other semifinal ongoing at breakfast at Wimbledon today. We'll talk about that more along the way today. Baseball last night, late out west, the Cubs beat the Padres 5-4 in 10 innings to sneak into first place by percentage points over Milwaukee. Cubs are 53-38. Milwaukee has two more wins, but also two more losses. So the Cubs share first place by about 3 percentage points at the moment. The Cardinals' slide continues, a 9-1 home loss to the Cincinnati Reds. Cardinals now 47-45, 3-9 in their last dozen home games, 6.5 games behind Milwaukee, rather behind Chicago and Milwaukee, I guess you could look at it that way at the moment. And the White Sox beat Kansas City 9-6. That's your baseball action. Here's our lineup for Saturday Sports Talk today. Coming up after our first break, about 9:10, we'll talk to Brad Sturdy from Rivals.com, Orange and Blue News. He's on the road down in Georgia and South Carolina. A lot of AAU basketball tournaments going on, and we'll get caught up with him. He's seen, Lauren, the Illinois coaches out and about, sometimes three at a time, watching certain players. We'll get an idea who they're looking at. I think you know most of the names. But it'll be interesting to get with Brad and see what he's seen from some of these players.
Well, this is a time now when Illinois made some real commitments to the Irvin Group, when they got Io DeSumo. Now, is that going to pay off? Because when they made that commitment, Talen Horton Tucker had committed to Illinois, and basically they denied him in order to stay with the Irvin Group. That's the inner workings of what happened, and it's a real dangerous approach because you're going one, you know, you're taking one side and basically losing out on the other. And now the reason for it, the basic reason, wasn't so much the DeSumo over Horton Tucker. It was the long-term future years that the Irvin players would favor Illinois, hopefully. That was the goal. That was the intention. And now we'll see whether that turns out or not because, boy, Irvin's got some more great players right now. We'll find out in the next few minutes. But they've got another terrific team.
So Brad Sturdy coming up in about 4 minutes. Then at the bottom of the hour, the bottom of the first hour of the show, we'll talk to Aaron Jordan from the Illini basketball team, one of just two seniors on the roster. He's been around a while and averaged about 8 points a ball game last year for the Illini, shooting 46% from the field overall and 46% from the three-point line. We'll check in with him, kind of get a take on some of the new guys that are around. At 9:45, we'll go to Wimbledon and get a hold of Brad Dancer, we hope. Brad made the last-minute decision yesterday to go once it was clear that Kevin Anderson was going to be playing for the championship. So Brad made arrangements and got over there. So we'll check in with him about 9:45. At 10 o'clock, Bernie Miklas from 101sports.com in St. Louis will join us. We'll talk some baseball as we approach the All-Star break, some Cardinal news and other baseball matters as well. At 10:30, we'll talk some Illinois football with strength and conditioning coach Joey Bosse.
Don't miss that. If you're an Illinois football fan, don't miss that. That's the best interview we've had in a while, Steve.
He's a good one, and we'll talk with him at 10:30. Some other headlines here before our first break. A lot of golf news involving Illini players and former Illini players at the John Deere Classic. Four Illinois guys were there. There are three left. Dylan Meyer had a pair of 68 in his first day. His first 2 days. He's 6 under par, trailing by 10, and the lead is at 16. Nick Hardy is 3 under par. Steve Stricker also minus 6 after a 66 yesterday. But once again, D.A. Points missed the cut. He's missed about 20 straight cuts, I think. D.A. Points in a bit of a slump, but he's still out there plugging along. In the Champions Tour, the Senior Tour Players Championship in Highland Park, Illinois, Mike Small tied for 11th at 8 under par. He's only 3 shots out of the lead there. He tees off shortly, about 9:30. So Mike Small trying for a top 10 finish on the Champions Tour. Web.com Tour is in Utah. Luke Guthrie is 12 under par after rounds of 63 and 67. He's tied for 5th, 5 shots back. Brian Campbell did not make the cut after rounds of 68 and 71.
If you will go back about a decade, you could wrap up your golf scores by how did Stricker do today?
Yep. Exactly.
Now you got to go all the way to Europe if you want to get them all.
9 guys. Let's go to Europe. Thomas Peters, Thomas Dietrich playing in the Scottish Open. Both are 4 under par, tied for 50th. The lead is 13 there. So 9 guys with Illinois connections playing professional golf at the moment. There's some other guys that have been out there and will be out there once again. I didn't even mention Scott Langley.
Langley is idle this week,
He's taking the week off. He's already got his tour card for the PGA Tour secured for next week. Those are some of the headlines at 9:09 on Saturday Sports Talk. We'll have periods of open line as well. And one of those periods will be when we have Brad Sturdy on. If you have any recruiting questions, feel free to join us. 356-9397 is the number. We'll take our first time out and be back with more Saturday Sports Talk after this.
Early Monday morning on DWS, we'll have live coverage of President Donald Trump's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. That'll be in the 4 a.m. hour Monday here on DWS.
Moving up on 9:12, Saturday Sports Talk with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly with you until 11 o'clock. Phone line is open. 356-9397 is the number if you'd like to join us, or you could text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 351-5357. Had a chance to visit earlier this week with Brad Underwood down at the Kendall Gill outing on Monday, and those guys were getting set to work with their team for a couple of days and then hit the road. They're going to be all, over the place on during the month of July. They're down south. They're going to be going to New York at some point as well, and it doesn't stop.
And I think Underwood's having knee surgery after this week, isn't he?
Next week? Uh-huh.
So he'll be hobbling for a week or two.
Well, you're not going to tell him not to go somewhere, are you?
Yeah, he's going to go, but he's going to be on crutches.
Well, a lot of guys that certainly the people are talking about, Khalil Whitney is one. There's a big guy or two in the state of New York that people are interested in. And that's all, you know, of course, for next year's guys, most of them anyway. I suppose Illinois could still add one this year. I don't know if that'll happen or not. But so they're looking ahead and yet trying to keep tabs on what's going on campus here. And
it's kind of wild to have all this recruiting talk about when we don't even have everybody on campus yet on the current freshman group. We got Kane and De La Rosa is still out there and will be there in August. But, it's a wild business. But, you know, all we're doing is being reminded of what's been going on for years. It's just that it hasn't been covered in the manner that it's covered now by Rivals and Scout and the other .coms. We would know that they were out there. We just wouldn't know the extent. And the other thing is that everybody is offering more scholarships than they did before. I noticed it with Indiana a few years ago. Now we've got Brad Underwood doing it with Illinois. And, I mean, making multiple offers into the 20s and 30s. And you just wonder how many are serious and how many they just throw out there just to have their name out there. I don't know.
And we've got Brad Sturdy on the line with us from somewhere down south. Good morning, Brad. Where are you?
I'm in, Augusta, Georgia. Fire game was just ending. So I was watching the end of that one.
That was a trick question. I just wanted to see if you knew where you were.
Sometimes you wonder, don't you?
So you've been watching hoops. You've been watching hoops for a couple of days. Give us some of the highlights, some of the things that you've seen so far, and maybe some of the things that or players that you had on your hot list, so to speak, to see when you went down there.
Well, obviously, you know, you love seeing Khalil Whitney from the Mac Irvin Fire. He's a 5-star kid that Illinois has done a great job early on to get in the recruiting process. They just played here. He probably had his worst game of the weekend in the sense of from a shooting standpoint, but he still had 25. He's just a dynamic athlete on the wing. Got to see some kids, you know, from some of the Texas kids. Illinois just recently offered a kid named Donovan Williams from Houston Hoops, who is a 6'6", long, lanky athlete. He's a young kid. He showed out a little bit last night. Had a good game. Those are a couple guys, but it's fun. You know, EJ Liddell obviously is here. He's a big guy. Kofi Coburn, among the other guys, Drew Timmy was another guy. So there's a ton of guys down here all within about all the venues are about 10, 15 minutes apart, so it's been fun to get to catch them.
So you're seeing a ton of coaches as well, right? The Illinois well represented, as are many of the other schools.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm Brad Underwood and Chin Coleman. We're just watching Khalil Whitney this morning with the Mac Irvin Fire. Jamal Walker actually went to – he's in Atlanta at another event. He drove there this morning, the Elite 32, which actually I'm headed to now. So over there to watch some of that. So it's fast and furious, but it's a lot of fun.
Brad, I brought up the connection between the U of I and, of course, Chin, as well as Underwood, with the Mac Irvin Fire, which I think we saw the commitment last year when they took Io DeSumo and basically let Talen Horton Tucker get away when they could have had him, basically because the Urban didn't want Io going to the same school with Horton Tucker. Is this working out, do you think, and to their benefit now that they're into the business with Whitney?
Oh, I mean, I think they're in great shape with Khalil Whitney. I mean, I think they've done a great job. I think they're one of the leading schools. There was a lot of concern about a Duke coming in, but we didn't see them today at the game. They haven't been in any of his games this week. So, So they obviously haven't seen him. They told him they were going to come, didn't. Obviously, Louisville is a school that is on his radar. They were here. You know, Calipari was here from Kentucky, and I don't know if he's watching him, but you had to be impressed with him today. So, you know, there's obviously, when you're recruiting players like this, there's going to be, you know, big competition from big-time schools. But same boat, you know, they've done a really nice job here with Whitney. I mean, they had him on campus last month. He had a great visit. I actually just talked to him you know, yesterday about that, and he talked about how, you know, how he really enjoyed the visit, how you know, he and Io are very tight, and so they've obviously, you know, built a great relationship there, and so and you know, obviously his relationship with Chin Coleman is good, and Brad Underwood, so he's definitely, Elmo's definitely done a good job there at the forefront of the recruitment, and we'll just, now it's a matter of, you know, getting those visits set up. And he wants to take a few officials. He's going to decide before the high school season in the fall.
Before the high school, that's what I was going to ask you. When do you see most of these players start to make commitments? Before the season, huh?
Yeah. Most of them want to be done. The only one who said he didn't want to be done with or wasn't sure was Trey Mitchell. Of course, he's missed this Peach Jam after getting an elbow to the eye and got a cut open. Eyes got a real bad black eye. So he may want to play a little bit. We'll see. How much he's able to play, you know, the next couple weeks. But most of the kids that, you know, we talked to over the week, they definitely want to get this, you know, done before November. And a lot of them are going to be cutting lists. I know, Drew Timmy, is cutting his list after Peach Jam, after, you know, probably Sunday or Monday. So we'll see how that goes. And then most of them are going to cut their list after July at the latest. So they see who comes to see them, who offers them and so forth. And then they'll cut the list down and then they'll set some visits and they kind of go from there. And, I know that Illinois has visits set up, in August with, Kofi, Coburn, and then, Oscar Tshiebwe, is a, you know, big kid, another big kid who's, going to, visit sometime in August or September as well.
Haven't mentioned E.J. Liddell, but he seems to be catching on with some really top teams, coaches. I see Coach K is interested in him. Where do you think Illinois stands with Liddell at this point?
It sounds like Ohio State is kind of the leader, and then Illinois, Missouri, and Kansas State would be the four. But all of that's going to probably get a wrinkle if, as expected, Duke offers this week, which most people expect that to happen. So if that does happen, obviously that will, you know, change things. And, you know, so, you know, you just, anytime they step up and with an offer, it makes things a lot more interesting. He had a good week. I wouldn't say he had a great week. I thought he had a good week. He basically solidified where he's at. He didn't, you know, in a top 50 player, but probably wasn't, you know, won't go up any, you know, rankings and things. I thought he was good, but not great. But he's a kid who in this spread offense that only runs and the system and his ability to block shots and do things. I mean, he is a kid who's a perfect fit for what they want to do. And so if they are able to land him, and I think they're in the mix, and sounds like they're going to have a visit. Ohio State has a visit set up the first weekend of September. I expect Illinois to have a visit either the next weekend on September, I think it's the 8th, or they'll have it on the Penn State game, which is that Friday night game on the 21st. Those are probably two possibilities for an EJ visit. So just kind of have to work out the dates and details and logistics and things like that.
Talking basketball with Brad Sturdy, Orange and Blue News, Rivals.com. Got him for a few more minutes. If you have any questions about a particular player, feel free to jump in. 356-9397 is the phone number. You mentioned the big guy, Kofi Coburn. He's from out east, is that right?
Yes, he's from New York.
What do you like about him, or what have you seen from him?
Well, he's a massive kid. He's like 6'10", maybe 6'11". He's 300 pounds. He moves pretty well for his size. He's going to have to lean up in college, obviously. But he's got a nice soft touch around the rim, too. Thing about him is with his size, when he gets positioned in a low block, you're just not going to stop him. And he showed up 17, 18-foot face-up jump shots, hit a couple of those. He's impressive. I mean, first thing is, even if basketball doesn't work out, he has a career in the WWE as a professional wrestler, because he could be like Kane or somebody, or, you know, he's just a massive kid. But he can, you know, he's a good rebounder. The one thing, you know, he's not, as quick as some of these, you know, smaller 6'9", 6'8", 6'9", guys. You can take him out of the perimeter, and, you know, saw that last night. He probably struggled in, like, ball screen defense stuff when they put him in isolation situations and made him, you know, defend a ball screen. And it was tough, and that's what they're going to do to him in college. That's where he's got to work on defensively. But on the offensive end, he's just an impossible matchup for most people because of his size and because of his touch and his footwork around the basket. And so, you know, he's a kid that would be really a vital piece. He's, you know, I think we've moved him up to number 25 in the country, so he's a five-star kid, and so he's awfully good.
What are you hearing about him and Illinois? I mean, is there any connection there, and who else might be high on his list?
Kansas, St. John's, and Illinois appear to be the schools that he talked to, you know, best about. He is a kid who is, he's planning on visiting in August. Orlando Antigua has done a phenomenal job building that relationship with him. They're very, you know, they're pretty tight. So that's been huge for Illinois. I think the school that could is getting involved hasn't offered yet, but I expect them to is Kentucky. So when you get to a kid who's a five-star kid and, you know, ranked in the top 25, you're going to have the Kentuckys and the Kansases and or the Dukes that you're going to have to recruit against. So, and that's just the name of the game. And I think in this case, Illinois has done a good job. They have to do it a little differently. You know, the Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, they can come in at the last minute and swoop in. And, you know, Illinois has to build those relationships over a couple of years and hope that wins out at the end of the day.
They've got a lot of offers out, which is the mode of operation for this staff, it appears. And we started off by talking about Khalil Whitney. You think he's the top priority right now?
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I think he's the guy. I mean, they need position. You know, they need that position obviously from the wing. But he's as good as anybody in the country. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think we have him at 23. That's probably low from what I've seen. I mean, he's the top 15 player, and on a given day, he might be as good as anybody you see. And it's not a great class nationally in the sense that there's not there isn't a DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley type guys. You know, they just aren't that level of player, I don't think. So he's right up there in that top echelon, you know, one of the best players in the country. And he's a priority. I mean, I think he's an instant impact guy. He comes in, he can, you know, shoot the ball from perimeter. He can get to the basket. He's, you know, crazy athletic, extremely long, 6'6". I mean, you know, just the kind of guy that you see. I mean, as one coach I was sitting with yesterday from another school, he said, you know, that kid, you just watch that kid, that kid's a pro. And he is. I mean, he's going to probably, I mean, I'd be shocked if he doesn't play in the NBA. So, I mean, he's just kind of guy that really fits the way basketball's played right now.
Brad, what else goes on? Do you leave? Is this the last day there in Georgia?
Well, there are the 16U and 17U championship games are tomorrow. So but there's just one single game. This will be, I fly out in the morning, fly back home in the morning. So I'll be watch some games up until I think the last game tonight for me will be in Atlanta at like 9:30. And then I'll fly home at 8 a.m. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be obviously it's a lot of basketball, and you probably watch, you know, in each session there's three or four games. There's six courts going on, so you're trying to catch as many as you can. Very, you know, it's very common to watch, you know, in a day you're watching 10, 12 games every day, and you know, all those, you know, so it's a lot of games, and over the course of 4 days. But by the end of this, I'll definitely I'll be basketballed out for a few days. So
and what about next week?
Next week, probably the big one for people to follow would be in the NY2LA event up in Mequon, Wisconsin, which is near Milwaukee. They've got a really nice event. A lot of the Illinois targets will be up there. It's a little closer to home for people, so maybe they could sneak out and get up there and watch some games. But, yeah, that's definitely probably the place to go. And then the last weekend, I would say, you know, a lot of people will be in Vegas. Mm-hmm. That's pretty the last weekend in July. That's probably the big one for there. And it's just – comparing these two, I mean, Vegas is so spread out. You know, there's so many different venues, so many different places. That's why this is really nice. There's only you know, I've only been at, you know, two venues that are this week, so, and seen a lot of games. So, that makes it a lot nicer. But you know, that's just the nature of the beast.
What are the rules this week? Can the coaches talk to the guys, or are they just there to be seen?
They're just there to be seen and evaluate. They don't actually talk to players. You know, one of the, you know, we get to interview the players at certain times and get some feedback from them on what they're thinking and where they're at in the process and so forth. But yeah, overall, you know, the coaches just want to be seen, want to be out there in their, you know, their gear with their, you know, whether they got a, you know, big black eye on it or whatever it is, or it's bright orange or whatever it might be. But you know, they definitely want to be seen in their colors and kind of rep that. And then the players, the first thing they do, I think, you know, one of the things they do is they look and see who's there. And that's one of the things they know who's there. You know, they know which guys are showing up for their games and which guys aren't. And I think that does, you know, which guys have made them a priority. And I think they notice those things.
Hey, Brad, good to visit with you. We'll talk about this year's Illinois basketball team another time, but safe travels and keep up the good work.
All right. Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You bet. That's Brad Sturdy from Rivals.com, Orange and Blue News. Illinois.Rivals.com is where you can find his information and Doug Bouchon's information on Illinois football as well. We're going to talk Illinois football and basketball on this show and baseball. Bernie Miklas still ahead. So is Aaron Jordan and Joey Bosse. And Brad Dancer, we'll check in with him at Wimbledon still to come. We're approaching 9:30 on WDWS Champaign-Urbana. We'll take our second break. When we come back, we'll talk Illinois basketball with senior guard Aaron Jordan. That's up next on Saturday Sports Talk.
Early Monday morning on DWS, we'll have live coverage of President Donald Trump's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. That'll be in the 4 a.m. hour Monday here on DWS.
9:32 on Sports Talk on this Saturday morning. If you missed the baseball scores from last night, a late score. The Cubs beat the Padres 5-4. Cincinnati over the Cardinals 9-1. The White Sox beat Kansas City 9-6. That tennis match still going on. It is now 9-8. Djokovic with the lead, but he's up 40-love. So it could be nearing an end here. We'll keep an eye on that for you, and I'm sure that if you're really a tennis fan, you're probably watching that at the moment. But some good stuff from Wimbledon. We'll talk more about that with Brad Dancer coming up as well at about 9:45. Let's talk some Illinois basketball now. Aaron Jordan, one of the two seniors on the Illini roster. How are things going so far?
They're going pretty good. Guys are getting after it. We live in the gym. Guys are always here. The older guys are pulling younger guys, which is good to see. And, you know, we're just getting along real well.
How do you look at your role going into this as one of the veterans?
Definitely being a leader, leader to the younger guys. Everything is new to them. You know, there's a lot of questions they're going to have, somebody to be there to answer them, show them, you know, the ins and outs of campus, and, you know, just give them the best experience possible.
Yourself, Kipper, Trent, DeMonte are the guys that are back. You guys pretty much stuck together through all this roster turnover?
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's a close group of guys, too, you know, especially the returners. You know, we've been through a lot, you know, especially me and Kip. You know, we've seen a lot of guys, been through two different systems. And so just taking everything we know and applying it to everybody else is good for us.
Did it take you a while to get accustomed to the fact that you were losing? You had seven or eight guys leaving. How'd you handle that?
Honestly, after being here, you know, freshman, sophomore, junior, just like after all that time, and honestly, it's not surprising. It's college basketball. It's college athletics. You know, stuff happens. People move on, do what's best for them.
I've heard, and you can relate, discuss this, that your main concern is getting a degree here. I mean, is that as important to you as basketball?
Of course it is. I mean, being at this great institution, I mean, having the opportunity to walk away with a degree from here, I mean, that's always important. It should be important in a lot of guys' minds, because at the end of the day, you're not going to be playing basketball forever.
Well, what do you plan to do when you get out other than basketball?
Well, right now I'm majoring in media, and then I'll end up getting a master's in RST. But initially, when I first got here, I wanted to do sports broadcasting. But, you know, just being here, being on campus, being around a lot of people, now I want to work with kids in some type of setting. Haven't really filled all that out yet, but that's what I want to do.
Coaching, perhaps?
that's always a possibility.
Something that maybe you hadn't thought about before that maybe is creeping into your mindset now?
Definitely keeping all my options open, talking to a lot of people, seeing what they think, you know, seeing what my family thinks.
Talk about the other three veterans first, then I want to talk about the new guys. But You guys, you mentioned you're working hard, but you're going to need that veteran leadership. And I kind of look as Trent as a veteran now after the year he had as a freshman.
Definitely, you know, Trent's ready to take that role on as a vet. You know, we're calling him a vet. He's been here. He's gotten some experience. Everything he went through last year, you know, just playing a game, having his success can help out the younger guys.
Based on what you see on the court playing with the guys, what has stood out for you among the new players?
Mm-hmm. Fearless. I mean, that's one word, and I'm going to keep saying it for those guys. Those guys, they step up to the challenge. They listen. You know, they try to get better every day. They step up to the challenges Coach puts out there for them. The older guys, you know, when they challenge them, they don't back down.
Well, you say fearless, but it's one thing to practice. It's another thing to get in Big Ten games. And tell me what, you know, how that transition has got to be difficult.
It is difficult, but honestly, it's going to happen. Can't stop it from happening. You know, they're going to have nerves, of course, you know, being in front of that many people, because that's probably not what they're used to. But, you know, we're here for them. Coaches are there for them. We're going to prepare them as much as we can until the season.
I think that's changed a little bit in recent years. A lot of guys played in some big games in high school. You got a bunch of state champions on this roster. That's got to help.
That does help a little bit. But then again, you know, just these big arenas, I mean, you can't really top that, especially in the Big Ten.
Talk about some of the new guys individually. Just start with Io and what you've seen from him so far.
Oh, very skilled. He talks out there as a point guard on the court, gets a lot of people involved, and he can get a basket for himself. I really like what I see there.
Anybody really surprise you, maybe that you didn't know too much about?
I didn't know a lot about Tev, but literally I saw that man jump off one foot, and I think he has trampolines in his shoes, to be honest. But, yeah, just him and his athleticism, you know, I can't wait to see what he can do.
Well, now, you're a three-point shooter. They tell me Griffin's a three-point shooter. Which one's the best?
I mean, hey, we go at it all the time, you know, just competing, see who can shoot better, see who can make more. You know, I just love that guy. He pushes me, and I push him.
Is he the best shooter among the new guys, you think?
I mean, he can put the ball in the hole. He's a great shooter. I can't wait to see where he's going to go from here.
And you got a new point guard that's had a couple of years' eligibility, 2 years' eligibility left, and then what do you see from him?
I definitely love his game. Stronger guard, you know, he has a good feel for the game. And I remember first day he was on campus, I looked up some of his film, and, you know, I was texting. I was like, dude, like, I love your game. I can't wait to be out there with you and everything. Like, just, like, please, like, come here, buy into the system. You know, I love you, man. Can't wait.
Do you see any major changes? And if so, what might they be in the style of play from last year to this year?
Definitely moving the ball a lot, you know, getting all the guys shots, making the other team have to actually play defense on us, you know, not just guarding one thing. Definitely, there's a lot of options out there. We have a lot of skill. We have a lot of talent out there. And just overall, you know, you're just going to see a lot of differences.
Probably going to be flying a little bit under the radar in the, once the Big Ten starts. You like that? Is that okay with you?
Honestly, I mean, that's been this way since I've been here, so it's nothing we're not used to.
And two extra Big Ten games this year, and including one in Chicago that we don't know who's going to be yet. Your reaction to adding two games to the Big Ten schedule, going now 20?
Definitely another opportunity for us to win. That's all that matters.
You get a chance to go to paradise, go to Hawaii, but have you paid much attention to the field there? That's maybe the best field ever in the Maui Invitational.
Yeah, definitely. You know, a lot of people talk about it. Pretty much every time I see somebody, that's the first thing they bring up. But, you know, right now I'm just focused on the summer and getting guys better.
And what are you doing to get yourself better? What's the main area you want to improve in?
I'm working on being in the best shape of my life. You know, I realize I'm going to be out there shooting. You know, if I don't get tired, the other team's going to get tired, and I'm not. So I'm going to be able to shoot and help the team win.
Well, this will definitely be a 9- or 10-man rotation. Wouldn't you expect everybody to be in and out of the game a lot?
Definitely. How fast we play, how hard guys are going to play. I know, you know, coach is going to have to, you know, keep rotating guys in. Players are going to have to trust each other that, hey, I'm going to go sit down for a minute, but then when I get right back in, you know, I'm playing as hard just for my teammates.
Is Underwood any more and more difficult to play under than Gross was in terms of defense? It looks like he's really after you all the time from a defensive end. I'm sure Gross was too, but was there a difference?
I mean, Underwood's just a very intense guy. So, I mean, he has an intense personality, and it shows in his coaching. So, I mean, from defense to offense, rebounding, getting steals, being in the right place, you know, he's always going to be there. He's always going to make sure we're there.
Talking to Aaron Jordan, you've been through kind of a lot here, and you've hung around. I'm sure you're not regretting that decision at all.
Not at all. I couldn't think of anywhere else to be honest. I'm glad I stayed, seen a lot, met a lot of people, made great connections, and I'm just happy to be here.
Can you remember when, back in high school, when you knew this is where you wanted to be?
Yeah, the recruiting process was, I always remember it was getting very long, and you know, I just one day decided, I was like, hey, I know where I want to be at. No sense to drag this out. You know, I'm going to go ahead and make my decision.
One guy I'm interested in, given the fact that he didn't have a lot of summertime activity last year, was Demonte. How's he looking?
Man, I can't wait to see Demonte out there. Just his overall game, you know, his basketball awareness, having him out there, you know, me and him getting in here in the morning, shooting, and other guys coming in, shooting with us. You know, I'm just really excited about Demonte, and I'm sure Illini Nation is too.
Well, have you seen a noticeable uplift in his game? Because not having the preparation had to, you know, he couldn't have been at his peak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed it. I mean, just being around him, seeing his attitude change, like, hey, you know, I'm back out here, you know, I'm ready to get this, all the work that we're putting in, all the information coaches are telling him, you know, he's taking it in, really using it to his advantage.
What do you think of the big guys? A couple of them aren't here yet, but Georgie's here. Talk a little bit about what he brings to the table. He brings a smile to your face when I mention his name.
It does, because, you know, Georgie's a funny guy, but he has a lot to learn, and he has a long ways to go, but I can't wait to see what he's going to do in the weight room, on the court, you know, just getting accustomed to how we play and how we do things here.
So what's next? These are kind of individual sessions you've got going now, and then you get together as a team when? October?
Yeah, around that time. But, you know, right now we're really just working on, like, team stuff, mm-hmm. I'd say. Team stuff on the court and off the court. You know, becoming together as a group, becoming stronger in that tight unit. Because if we are like that off the court, then, you know, when it on-the-court stuff comes, you know, it's better and we trust each other.
And talk about the hours. Now, you're allowed 8 hours with the coaches or the training staff. How many hours are you spending on the court with Underwood? How many hours in the weight room, and how much practice do you guys do away from that?
Mm-hmm. We do a lot of practice away from that, actually. Knowing that the coaches go recruit, and so they're not here, you know, that's up to, like, you know, us now. It's like, okay, you know, let's get in here, let's go watch some film with one of the managers or something. You know, let's go do some extra stuff in the weight room, you know, just to make our bodies feel better because we know what we do and how hard we go. It's been a lot of that from veteran leadership, you know, getting guys together, playing open gym on our time.
Well, it's not football season yet, even, but I'm sure you're anxious for basketball as well.
I can't wait for it.
I saw something more. 73 days to the first day of basketball. Did you see that?
First day of basketball practice?
I think so.
Yeah. I can't. I mean, that's something. I mean, that's that countdown. Once, you know, it's starting now, and just we always looking at our phones like, all right, 73, 72, 71. Okay, all right, let's go.
In some ways, it never ends, though, does it? You're always doing something.
Always. I mean, we're always busy, no matter what. I mean, if somebody told us to sit down and do nothing, we couldn't.
Aaron Jordan, good to see you. Thanks for your time.
Appreciate you guys.
Aaron Jordan averaging about 8 points a ball game last year as a junior. He'll be one of two seniors on the Illinois basketball team. Shot 46% from the three-point line and the field last season. Got a really good start shooting the ball from long range. And he'll be don't know if he'll be in that starting lineup. Who knows who will be, but he'll be a key contributor.
Well, the way they play, they're going to play 9-10 players. Yep. You know that, so he'll be a definite factor, and if he can continue the shooting that he showed early last season, he was red hot for a while.
We're getting, I don't know where you folks are listening, but downtown Champaign, we're getting some a little fireworks display here, some lightning and thunder and some heavy rain on this Saturday morning. So if you missed it, it'll be Kevin Anderson against Novak Djokovic for the Wimbledon Championship tomorrow morning. And if you're looking for a place to watch it with some Illini fans, how about Houlihan's? They're going to have a Wimbledon breakfast at Wimbledon watch party tomorrow, 8 o'clock in the morning.
That's right, and that'll be fun.
It will be fun. It'll be loud, but there's somewhere to go if you'd like to check that out. We'll talk more about Wimbledon. We'll get Brad Dancer on the line. He is in London for that, making the decision yesterday to head that way. We'll try to connect with him in just a moment right here on Saturday Sports Talk. Stay with us back after this.
Early Monday morning on DWS, we'll have live coverage of President Donald Trump's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. That'll be in the 4 a.m. hour Monday here on DWS.
Saturday Sports Talk continues here on DWS. Steve Kelly along with Lauren Tate on what's turning into a stormy, rainy Saturday morning here in central Illinois. You know, Lauren, in athletics, whether you're playing or coaching or whatever, you got to make a lot of snap decisions and in-game decisions. It happens off the court or field as well when you have to decide where you're going to go next. And Brad Dancer was in that kind of situation yesterday. Brad joins us from London as he gets set for the Wimbledon Championship tomorrow. Kind of a busy couple of days for you, eh, Brad?
It's been busy. You haven't gotten much done. There's too much tennis to watch. So. That's exciting.
How difficult was it for you to get make those arrangements once you knew you wanted to do that?
Yeah, you know, fortunately we got a great staff and we're able to pull it off and made it here safely. So excited to be on the grounds and just looking forward to being here and seeing this match tomorrow, which is just going to be incredible.
Hey, Brad, how long does that flight take from Champaign?
It was not bad at all. It's maybe we went to O'Hare to Gatwick direct, and I think it was less than 7 hours, so easy.
Okay. Did you get any sleep?
I got a little bit of sleep, but you just certainly don't feel, I would say, fully rested. I can promise you that.
Well, you don't have to be rested, but, boy, Anderson does. And tell me, how do you think his legs will – how long does it take to recover from back-to-back matches like that?
Well, I'm just going to say, it'd be one thing if he had just played the sort of the epic match with Fed or just had the one with John. But, you know, you play those back-to-back, and it certainly takes a toll. And I know that he's, you know, sore and stiff, and mentally, you know, you get a little fatigued as well. But bottom line is he's a gamer, and I think he'll do everything he can to try to be ready for tomorrow.
Well, that fifth set, as everybody knows now, 26-24, that was a nail-biter in itself, and that took 3 hours. What's your opinion about that, and should the scoring system be changed in your mind?
It's funny. You most of the time you say, no, it's kind of fun to watch the 10-8 in the fifth or 11-9 in the fifth, but as that match went on, I was sort of having that feeling like I was feeling bad for whoever won that match because of just the puts them behind the eight ball going to the next match. And I'm sitting here watching Djokovic and Nadal and wondering, hey, they could be headed towards the exact same thing here. You know, usually you don't get those. They're not, you know, somebody wins 9-7 or 10-8. But obviously I think it's time to maybe take another look at that and see what's best for the tournament. And, yeah, just to produce a better next round. I saw a stat the other day that of these long matches, the winner has gone on to lose almost every time. So hopefully Kevin can change that course tomorrow, but I do think it's something for the ATP to look at.
You know, I come away thinking about the rules and the fact that, the basketball court's the same court that it was when it began, and volleyball, the net's definitely too low for the men. And it looks to me like some of these guys like Anderson and Isner have outgrown the courts. I mean, you can't get their serve back unless you just guess right, can you?
Well, it's funny. I mean, you say that, and that's sort of what I was expecting in that match. And you watch it, and they had a number of long rallies. I was very surprised at how well both of them returned the other guy's serve. I mean, early on in that match, John was putting a ton of pressure on Kevin's service games. And I think it's different down the stretch in the fifth set when they're both so fatigued. It's definitely harder to return and get in points. But I felt like the first four sets, I was really impressed with how both guys were able to challenge each other on their serve games. So I think it's you know, and again on grass, it makes it extra difficult. So it's a whole different scheme of things on grass than it is on some of the other surfaces. So I don't think we're there yet to change the court, but they're
no,
they're
I don't think I don't think the courts will ever be changed. But I notice if you get that ball in that corner, if the service is perfect, the defender hadn't got much chance. I mean, when you have 102 aces in a match, that's a lot of aces, isn't it?
That's a lot of aces. That's probably about 100 more than I had in my career.
So. Well, you mentioned the grass factor, and you do get some interesting bounces. You saw a lot of balls, well, not a lot, but a few balls kind of fouled off when it obviously had taken a bounce that they weren't expecting.
It's, you know, everybody always asks what it's like to play on grass, and I sound stupid to say, but it's just think of playing on a putting green. I mean, it's a crazy thing to think about that you're going to play on an organic surface that has all sorts of bad bounces, and your footing is never good. You always feel like you're going to slip and fall. So it's just a very unique feeling to actually compete on a grass court as opposed to going out and hitting some balls around with your buddies. So it's an entirely different experience, no question.
How do you think the two players stack up? I see they've played, what, 5 or 6 times, and Anderson's won once. How do you think they stack up as in terms of their styles?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting match. You know, Kevin beat him in Miami a number of years ago, and then a couple of years ago he was up 2 sets of love on Djokovic and had a chance here at Wimbledon. So I think from a fear factor, there's not going to be anything with Kevin that says you know, I can't play with this guy or I can't beat him. Having said that, Kevin's biggest strength, you know, counters Djokovic's biggest strength, which is return to serve. So I don't see Kevin being able to go out and sort of routinely hold and just, you know, put 10 easy holds together. I think one of the keys to this is going to be how much pressure Kevin can put on Djokovic's second serve. I mean, Djokovic has a tendency at times to get the yips a little bit on second serves, and Kevin's very powerful with what he can do. So I think Kevin's going to have to take care of his service games, which is not easy against Djokovic, and then do whatever he can when Djokovic is missing first serves to put a lot of pressure on him.
Now, I see where Anderson's serve is like 15 miles an hour faster than Djokovic's. Is his ground stroke also that much faster?
I think right now Kevin is probably hitting a bigger ball than Djokovic. You know, it's the average ball. Having said that, Djokovic is one of the best absorbers of pace. So a lot of times that doesn't do you a lot of good against him. The harder you hit the ball, the better he absorbs it and redirects it, and you find yourself scrambling for the next ball. So I think the key for Kevin is to pick and choose his spots where he does want to attack and hit the big ball. And other than that, sometimes the bigger ball you hit to Djokovic, the more he's sort of counterattacking you and really using your pace.
Give us an idea what Kevin Anderson has been doing the last 18 or 20 hours. I guess hydrating for sure, making sure he's getting plenty of nutrition. But is that? I mean, does he get back on the court in between?
Yeah, he gets back on the court, but when I tell you it's probably the definition of a hit and giggle a little bit, you know, just because of the circumstances. Normally, Kevin likes to train on his off days in between and run through some very specific patterns that he wants to use on the next day, but I think today's going to be much more of just kind of get out there and feel the ball in the strings a little bit and make sure the legs sort of get the acid out and get the arm shoulder loose. I mean, it's a lot of serving yesterday, so all those areas of his body, get them loosened up a little bit and try not to use them very much. So loose but not used, I think, today.
Well, it wasn't that long ago. If you were 6'2 or 3 playing tennis, you were a tall guy. But that's really right. Changed, hasn't it?
It has. I think I'm guessing that was the tallest semifinal ever, in a Grand Slam. So I can't imagine any others that would be taller. And you've got the Karloviches out there. And we've got a young American, Riley Opelka, who's actually 7 feet tall, who's doing really well. So I think, these guys are figuring out, at a young age, maybe they weren't that tall. And so they were taught how to move well on a tennis court. And then as they grew and they got these powerful serves, but they can still move well. And I think you see that with Kevin, where his dad coached him to be not necessarily a giant player. And Kevin's game sort of reflected that in college, where he's very consistent, very stubborn. But then as he grew and he kind of molded his game professionally, he just become this juggernaut of a power tennis player.
Brad, will you go to see Anderson beforehand and or Craig Tiley? Is he there?
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to connect with Craig, but we'll see Kevin, and I'm going to try to track down Craig. I'm not sure if Craig's even still here. He's going a million miles an hour, and he's got all sorts of meetings that happen in the first week, and then he's usually kind of running out of here. So I need to give him a buzz here right now and let him know I'm in town. So
now, will you be seated tomorrow with Kevin's current coach?
I don't even know yet. So I just told them that I'm coming and looking forward to being here and support any way I can. And so don't really care about that stuff. Just want to be here to support him.
Do you get any idea?
A big part of this, too, is, you know, there's the junior tournament going on, so it's a channel. There's probably maybe 50 other coaches here from college coaches here, so it's a chance for me to at least show our face at the junior event as well.
Do you get any idea when Anderson might be back in Champaign? Might he be at a football game, for instance, and be introduced? Or do you know if he's going to be at the September Hall of Fame thing?
He's not going to make the Hall of Fame thing. Ironically, that's the Laver Cup is going to be in Chicago that same weekend. If he gets chosen for that, he may be a participant in that Laver Cup. We're kind of waiting to see on how what happens there. But Craig's a part of that, and Roger Federer and his agency is a part of that. And I think Kevin's certainly garnered a lot of respect from those people that are involved in that, and he may get a shot to play in that event.
You touched on a couple of things a couple of minutes ago, but real briefly, a couple of keys for Kevin to be successful tomorrow.
Yeah, I think obviously number one thing always with Kevin is, can he take care of his serve? If he produces holds, and does that consistently, then I think the power in his game, his return power, starts to spook people over time a little bit. And if he doesn't produce holds, then he gets behind the eight ball, and then it's an uphill battle from there. So number one is, can he go out and hold serve? And to that, he's got to mix up his serve well. He's got to serve a high first serve percentage. He's got to take care of the first ball after the serve. So those are the keys to that. And then secondly, I think the next thing is really just how much pressure can he put on Djokovic's second serve? And can he get Novak thinking about those situations before he serves and get him a little bit edgy in those scenarios?
Well, he's playing for a couple million dollars. Sounds good to me. Even if he loses, it's 1.5, I think.
Not bad. It's changed a lot. I think everybody's always asked me, why are guys playing later and more successful in their 30s? And I think, I hate to say it, but I do think the money is a part.
You bet.
You know, guys can go out and have, I can either sit at home and do nothing or train really hard and keep playing the sport and earn $1 million a year. So.
Hey, Brad, we always appreciate talking with you, especially in this situation. It's really exciting for Illini fans, and we'll look for you on TV there, rooting on Kevin Anderson.
Yeah, and by the way, there's a big thing at Houlihan's at 8 o'clock. You're going to miss that, Brad.
I was just going to say, I'm going to miss that, but the rest of our staff is going to be there, and Coach Clark would be there as well, but he just had a third baby, so he's going to miss that. And we'll have a bunch of DIA staff, and we're going to do the strawberries and creams over at Houlihan. So
wow.
Setting that up. So for those of you that can sneak out of bed and come watch it, you get some good breakfast at Wimbledon over at Houlihan tomorrow morning.
Hey, Brad, thanks. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, guys.
Brad Dancer with us from Wimbledon this morning. Kevin Anderson plays tomorrow at 8 o'clock. Novak Djokovic is his opponent. And for the seventh time, as Kevin is 1-5 against Djokovic over time. But as you heard Brad mention, he had him on the ropes one other time at Wimbledon, beat him the first time they played back in 2008 on hard court. Approaching 10 o'clock, it is 9:59 WDWS, Champaign-Urbana. The first hour of Saturday Sports Talk is in the books. In hour number two, we'll talk some Major League Baseball and some Illini football as well. Feel free to join us. 356-9397 is the number, and we're back with more Saturday Sports Talk after this.
It's the second hour of Saturday Sports Talk. Join the program by calling 217-356-9397 or send a text to the Castle Heating and Cooling text line, 217-351-5357. You can also email us at talk@wdws.com. Here again are your hosts, Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly.
And welcome back to hour number two of Saturday Sports Talk here on a stormy Saturday morning in central Illinois. That first hour, we talked to Illinois basketball with Brad Sturdy from Orange and Blue News, Rivals.com. We also visited with Illini senior guard Aaron Jordan. Just wrapped up a conversation from Wimbledon, where Illinois tennis coach Brad Dancer is stationed for the championship match tomorrow, featuring former Illinois All-American and Hall of Famer Kevin Anderson against Novak Djokovic coming up tomorrow morning. Now it's time for hour number two. We're going to talk some Major League Baseball. The All-Star break is upon us, and Bernie Miklas from St. Louis joins us from 101sports.com. Good morning, Bernie. How are you?
Steve, I'm good. Lauren, how are you guys doing? I apologize for last week. Thanks for having me on today.
No problem. We want to know what's... Go ahead, Lauren.
Well, I just want... Before we get started, I want you to think up something good you can say about the Cardinals, Bernie. Then we'll get into the real stuff.
I still... You got to love Miles Michaelis.
Okay.
What a great find. Look, I think, granted, a slow start, I think Matt Carpenter's having an excellent season. What he's been able to put together has been fantastic. He's as good as ever, since he got things together. And he plays, he doesn't look smooth the way he throws, but he actually, when you look at the metrics and everything else, he's actually one of the better third basemen in the league. So that, there's that. What else we got? Well,
How about Yadier Molina?
Well, always. He's the rock. And just having Paul DeJong back is a very positive thing. I like some of the younger relievers they've had, Jordan Hicks. I tell you what, this Jairo Munoz, too, has been an impressive young rookie. I think they found themselves a player there, too. And here's a guy that can play all over the field. So he can be really valuable because he can play just about every position except, I don't know that they, in the minors, I don't think he played first base or catcher, but that's pretty much it. You can put him anywhere.
Well, I was just kidding when I said it because I know that we're going to get into the Fowler thing real quick. And, and Matheny, I mean, you've written some tough stuff on Matheny recently. What's your real feeling about where they're going to go with him?
Lawrence, it's hard to read. I talked to John Mozeliak for a long time the other day. He's very frustrated, but he wasn't tipping anything off. I tell you what, though, and please, I want everybody to understand, I'm not making a prediction. This is not a prediction, but based on the fact that a lot of people in the organization, including the owner, and let me just throw that in real quick. Bill DeWitt gave an interview to Rick Hummel, the great baseball writer at the Post-Dispatch, and throughout the interview, it's like three different times he criticized the offense. I mean, you know, Bill does it in a gentle way, but he talks about how disappointed he is in the offense. We thought we were going to be better. We should be better. And he kept coming back to it, and I went, uh-oh. So I would not be surprised if they make a change of batting coach maybe during the All-Star break. But, again, I'm not playing coy. I'm not predicting it. But it just seems like it's getting spilled out there in the open. Some of the bosses are pretty much reached their limit waiting for this offense to come around.
Well, does that just mean that Mabry's going to fall on the sword? I mean, I don't know how important batting coaches are, but I guess it would be some kind of indication that they're doing something, right?
Yeah, Steven, I do think their approach is all wrong. And, I mean, you know, people are going to say, well, who are you? And they're right. But I study this stuff in terms of the hitting approach, and they take an awful lot of strikes. And when they're ahead in the count where they should have a huge advantage, they'll take strikes, you know, when they're ahead 2-0, when they're ahead 3-1, where they're ahead 1-0, and compared to other teams, they're not aggressive swinging at strikes, and that's a fact more than an opinion, and so they seem to have it backwards. So they need to be a little more aggressive when they go up in the plate, because, and I'm not saying, you know, go up there and grip and rip and don't try to work the count. I'm not saying that at all, but they're letting a lot of good pitches go by. But just a real quick, to get back to Matheny, I'm not sure how to read it. The other thing, Lawrence, Steve, and the Bill DeWitt story that Rick Hummel did, I thought it was very interesting because usually when he's asked about Matheny, he will say a lot of nice things. And he's our manager, you know, well, we think he's doing a terrific job, blah, 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 you know. And this time, DeWitt didn't say anything close to that. He just said he works hard, but then he added something like, well, I'm not making any predictions about, you know, what's going to happen with our players or anyone else. And I'm thinking, oh, okay, well, that to me, that was meaningful. It meant to me that the manager's job is an open-ended question as of this moment, because if Bill DeWitt puts it out there like that, that's the only interpretation you can make.
Well, Bernie, if you're going to help this ball club, where do you start? Where do you start?
Oh, man. Well, given how terribly disappointing the offense is, I think that's still the number one reason that's holding them down. You know, I don't have the stat in my head here, Lauren and Steve, but I was, and it happened again last night when they scored one run. You know, the Cardinals have a very, an unimpressive record against teams with losing records. And I was checking this out yesterday. I was really surprised, like, how many times when they've played against losing teams that do not have good pitching staffs, how many times the Cardinals have been held to three runs or less. And that's one of the things that's really holding them back. It's one thing if you get shut down by good teams with good pitching staffs, but they're getting shut down by bad teams with bad pitching staffs. So that can't be happening. But you asked me specifically where, that's the problem. This thing is such a puzzle, and it's kind of hard to make the pieces fit because, look, they got too many outfielders they know what to do with, Do you trade a Jose Martinez and move Matt Carpenter to first and get yourself a third baseman? That's one way to go about it. Do you move a Tommy Pham and try to get maybe a pitcher? Move say Pham and a pitcher and try to get an outfielder. Do you trade Marcell Ozuna, who after all is going to be a free agent a year and a half from now? Do you see if you can get something for him? I mean, I think it's a matter of just shaking it up. And the only hint that John Mozeliak has been dropping is when he talks about the trade deadline, he talks about basically my read is that they're looking to do something to shake it up, but something that will bring in player or players who will be with the team for a while, not any kind of rental. And the other thing is they need bullpen help always. Even though they got a lot of relievers, they still could use another guy down there. One sure guy to go with Hicks and Norris.
Well, back to the manager, Joe Girardi's sitting out there. Of course, he's an American League guy, and you got Stubby Clapp doing great job in the minors in Memphis. Would you bring up a Clapp? Would you look at a Girardi, or is there somebody else that you would favor?
That's a great question. I've thought a lot about that. I know a lot of people would say Joe Girardi, and I have reason to believe that he would want the job, given his Midwest roots. And he did spend some time here at the end of his career. Y'all remember he had a back injury, didn't play much, but he was here. Here's the one thing that gives me pause about Joe Girardi, and I respect him. Please understand it. I really do. But I'm just trying to look at this pragmatically. Because this isn't my judgment. It's what they would do. The conversations I've had with Mozeliak, we were talking about managers getting fired and after last year. And I said, well, why did these guys who've been winning, why did they get fired, Why did Farrell get fired in Boston? Why did Joe Girardi get fired? And why did this guy get fired? And he said, look, you got to understand something. The game's changed. It's really, really changed. There's a generation of players now that's the you want to call them millennials, whatever. He said, there's nothing wrong with this. It's just the way the world's changed, baseball's changed. You have to really communicate well with these guys. You have to nurture them. You have to bring them in the office and, hey, how you doing? What's going on with your life? Everything good? How's your parents? What can I help you with? And he says, it's really important to have a manager who can communicate and really, really connect with young players, because young players, they don't respond to being hollered at. They don't respond to the manager sitting in the office and having a coach handle everything. And Mo's point was that Girardi had problems with those young players in New York in terms of building a relationship. And he said that Don Farrell, the reports in Boston, same type of deal. He was aloof, kind of remote from his players. So that leads me to believe, and I could be wrong, I'm just going by what he was saying about how important the communication is. That leads me to believe they would want someone who would be really good at communicating with younger players. And let's face it, they're going to have younger players. They got younger pitchers now. They're going to have some younger position players coming up from Memphis. I don't think that eliminates Joe Girardi by any means. But what I'm saying is, don't assume that it would be a guy like Girardi, because a guy like Stubby Clapp, who has done great in Memphis, and he has managed some of the very, very good players that are, if not here already, will be soon. That gives him another advantage. And by all indications, the guy's a heck of a manager.
Does Jose Oquendo have a chance at being a major league manager, or has that maybe passed him by? What do you think about Jose?
Steve, he has said that he thinks it's passed him by. Not that he, not that he's, 90 years old or something, but he understands how difficult that job is, and he doesn't think at this stage that it would be something he would have just the patience for, the energy for, the having to deal with all the media stuff all the time. I think he just wants to coach and try to take guys and make them better, and now look, maybe they talk to him. I mean, I'd never rule it out. You gotta respect the man, but I really don't think he's got that managing bug in him anymore.
How chilly is the relationship between Matheny and Fowler, and can that be fixed?
Well, the Cardinals try to put on a nice little we are the world party yesterday, and that's what I respect. I don't think it's very good, and I think it's got to be fixed. if Fowler's going to stay here. And look, I think at the end of the season, maybe they'll try to move him. But again, it's going to be really tough unless he can show some life at the plate, where some teams would say, well, look, maybe he hit in the second half. Maybe he needs a change of scenery. You know, he's not getting along with people there or whatever. So it's going to be tough to move him as it is right now. But let me ask you this, and this again is just throwing stuff out there. If they would make a managing change, and I don't know if they are, but if they would, well, would that mean that they feel maybe Fowler, this would have a positive change for Fowler? You know, so there's a lot of variables here when it comes to some of the decisions they have to make. Because if you have Bethany in place, you probably should try to move players that he doesn't like. If you have a new manager, then maybe some of these players like Fowler, there's a reason to stay with them a while. I don't know. It's a really tough call.
Visiting with Bernie Miklas from 101sports.com in St. Louis for a couple of more minutes. Yesterday was Yadier Molina's 36th birthday, and it seems like the Hall of Fame talk is jumping a little bit. Some national guys have jumped in on that, on whether or not Yadier Molina will be a Hall of Famer. And I've had people ask me, and my first response is he's not done playing yet. I mean, he's got time to add to that resume, but what are your thoughts about that?
Well, I agree. I kind of think he's done enough already, but, you know, if he can add to it, you know, rest of this year and the next two, and who knows if he'll be done and for sure after that. You know, guy just loves to play. But he's had a very unique career, and I think where some of my friends in the national media who I respect but we can disagree, I think where they go wrong is they try to kind of measure him in a traditional way. And I think, first of all, catchers ought to be measured against other catchers. You can't measure them against other positions. And I also don't think some of the – and I'm a believer in a lot of the new statistics, very much so. But even I would say, look, you can look at wins above replacement. They do not do a guy like Yadier Molina justice, because you cannot quantify his value with a wins above replacement stat, because there is no way in there – and that is a formula for that stat that accounts for the way he puts together scouting reports, the way he calls games, the way he handles the pitchers from a personality standpoint, knowing exactly what to do to calm a guy down or to keep a guy concentrating. He's a master psychologist. He completely shuts down the other team's running game. And what I'm talking about there is not so much this year, where the stolen base percentage against him is high. It's just look at the number of attempts. And I went back and checked, and since he's been their starting catcher, you know, the Cardinals are the only team in baseball that have allowed under 1,000 steals. And the next team in line was Arizona, and they've allowed more than 300 stolen bases more than the Cardinals. And there are teams that have allowed more than 600, 700, 800 stolen bases in the Cardinals. See, people who look at, like, well, look at stolen base throwout rates drop, they're not looking at the thing that really matters, the low number of attempts against him, because they don't want to try him. So, and the other thing, too, so and you look at, you know, here's a guy already, you know, first of all, this is one of the great franchises in baseball history. And what does it mean? What should it mean to his Hall of Fame resume that he's already fourth in the history of this great franchise in games played? And he's already moving in the top 10 in some offensive categories. And here's a guy that's been part of four National League pennant winners, two World Series champions. Here's a guy that, other than Jorge Posada, has caught more postseason games than any catcher, won more postseason games than any catcher. You look at his postseason statistics. You look at where he ranks now in terms of catchers offensively all time. He's in the top 10 in hits. He's in the top 10 in RBIs. I mean, what do you want the guy to do, right? I don't understand it. He checks every box, including the catcher ERA. The Cardinals pitching staff has been in the top three, you know, all these years since 2005. What exactly would they have this man do? I mean, do you have to hit 40 home runs as a catcher to get in the Hall of Fame? You put a guy like Piazza in the Hall of Fame because he hit a bunch of home runs, that's fine. But then what you're saying, if you exclude Yadier Molina and you put a guy in based on his offense when he can't catch, what you're saying is defense doesn't matter then. And right. to me, that's the wrong message. I'm sorry for the speech, but I got that one memorized.
No, that that all made sense.
I think it's true of a lot of positions, you know, whether you go back to Willie Mays or and Hank Aaron, who, you know, do we ever consider defense in that? You know, the Aaron backers will support his batting averages, home runs, you know. Willie Mays backers will, it's more subjective, you know, and I think much of what you've just described with Molina is subjective in that it isn't statistical, you know?
Right, and I think everybody, even the people that say, well, I'm not sure, look, I respect him. I think he's been really terrific. I'm not sure he's a Hall of Famer. Well, what I would say to them is this, all right, if you say he's an asset and you say you're not sure, that's okay, but if you say he's an asset, he's really good, and he's really helped the Cardinals for a long time. Well, if someone's an asset and they're valuable, and even the people on the fence say, absolutely, he's valuable. Well, isn't one of the most valuable things about an asset is that he plays a lot? He's on the field playing, catching as much as possible. I mean, this guy very soon will be in the top 10 in the history of the game in terms of games started and innings caught. And, in fact, if you use his postseason stats, he's – there already. The fact that he's, if we all agree he has value, he provides a lot of value. Well, value is also quantified by the fact that he's out there all the time. He's reliable. He's dependable. You can count on him. You know, that's a big part of it. A guy's not valuable if he can't play, if he's hurt, or he's deficient in a way where the manager benches him. So you have to look at the endurance factor as well.
Let's take a quick phone call for Bernie Miklas from Pinehurst, North Carolina. Cardinal fan Marty is on with us. Hey, Marty.
Hey, Steve and Lauren and Bernie. Good
hey,
morning
Marty.
To y'all. More than a one-part question, Bernie. I understand that managers often get the boot when things don't go well. Seems to me that this offense has been a problem for 3 years. Seems to me that the front office made a lot of decisions on who to bring in and who to pay. They had a bunch of good young outfielders coming and yet spent money on a Dexter Fowler. And I'm wondering, should some blame go there? And then the last part of this, would all of this been moot had a great young impact bat not killed himself drunk driving in the Dominican Republic a few years ago?
Two really good questions. First part, I wrestle with that one because I think the talent level needs to be better. But I also have picked up on something here. And for whatever reason, if you look at some of the moves they've made, for whatever reason, players who come here from other teams, they get worse. They don't get better. And I don't know what that says. But, for example, everybody in baseball said Mozeliak made a heck of a trade for Marcell Ozuna. Everybody said that was the best move any team made.
I think he's hurt, though. I understand it. He's
short. He could be. But then again, if you look at how hard he hits the ball, he's actually hitting the ball harder than he has like last year, for example. But he hits nothing but ground. He hits too many ground balls. He hits the ball hard, but he hits ground balls. My point being, there's no reason for a Marcell Ozuna to have 20 extra base hits. And there's no reason for him to like continue to hit ground ball after ground ball. Is that the general manager's fault? Because the general manager had every reason in the world to believe he was the power hitter, because you would have had 30, you would have had the other 29 general managers or the 28 minus Miami and St. Louis. And yeah, I mean, this guy's legit. Go get him. And so that would have been a unanimous vote. So is that Mo's fault? I don't think so. The Dexter Fowler last year, he's pretty good. Really good, actually. Career high home runs, career high slugging percentage, career high RBIs. Did he suddenly get old? Is it part of this? Is it bat speed slowed down? I don't know. That could go down as a bad contract, and yes, that would be on Mozeliak. I agree with you.
But well, my question with getting
why
him,
why do players come here and get worse?
There's
a long list of guys, long list of guys who came to St. Louis from other teams who got immediately better. It's an amazing list if you go through and look at it sometime. And so why do guys get worse here? Managers do make a difference in that area. But I'm sorry, Marty. As far as Tavares, you know what? I will never know. I assume he would have been a heck of a player but we'll never know. There was some current concern at the time that he could not hit fastballs. And I got to admit, I was a big fan of his and expected greatness, but I was a little taken aback by how he was overpowered. So we'll never know. It's just a shame. We'll never know.
My only question with Fowler, Bernie, is when you have the kind of outfielders they have coming, why do you need a Dexter Fowler? Because he's not really an impact bat. I just didn't understand that money just to improve the clubhouse, which was the only thing I got out of that.
Well, I don't think they knew exactly what they had in some of these guys, in fairness.
Okay.
Because I was I was thinking about this because I've asked myself the same question. Look, Harrison Bader is better than they thought he would be. He really is.
Sure.
He can't hit right-handed pitching, and that's a big challenge for him because over 70% of the games in Major League Baseball are started by right-handed
right-handers.
So that's number one. Number two, they didn't have Tyler O'Neill at the time because he was playing in the Seattle organization. The third thing is they have a guy that they really like this Oscar Mercado. At the time they signed Fowler, I mean, Oscar Mercado was a tadpole. I mean, he hadn't shown the kind of all-around stuff that he's doing at Memphis. I could name a couple more, but my point being, those guys weren't quite established as like, whoa, what do we have here? You know, at that point, you didn't know what they were.
So they got a little lucky, and some guys are better than they thought they were going to be. That's not bad.
Yeah. Then this kid Munoz is going to be one of them, or he is one of them.
Good.
Marty, thanks for the call. We appreciate that.
Thanks, Marty.
Make it a good one, guys.
All right, you too.
Take care.
Bernie, we'll let you go. Appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you again next month. Hopefully we'll have some other stuff to talk about Cardinal-wise, but also the PGA Championship coming to your area. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit too.
Yeah, and good luck to Anderson tomorrow in the Wimbledon final. That's exciting. And before I go, man, coming out of the All-Star break, 5 games at Wrigley Field.
Ooh,
Then they play Cincinnati for 3, I think.
If you can't reach me, I'll be hiding in the closet or under the bed, one or the other.
the first 11 games out of the break for the Cardinals, first 11 games, they got 8 against the Cubs. So if there's any chance we say, well, can they make a run? We're going to know 11 games into the second half. How's that?
And then do you become a seller?
I know.
One more thing. We talked about Yadier Molina. We talked about Cardinal managers. What are your thoughts about Molina as a manager somewhere down the road when his playing days are over? He's so baseball's savvy.
And everybody respects him. I think he's got the DNA in him because his father was a leader and a manager and a coach that was revered in Puerto Rico. And Yadi is revered by players. I think he'd have to like bring his personality out more, but again, that's nothing really. I mean, he's looking at him as a player. A player's personality is not what a manager's personality would be. I think they all, you know, realize that before they make the jump. So he's got tremendous ability to lead others. So I think he'd be a candidate, but you know, I don't know how he feels about certain things though, whether he wants to throw the metrics in the garbage and all that stuff. And let's face it, that's never going to change. The front offices want guys that are willing to go along with that stuff, too. And I just don't know where Yadi stands one way or the other.
Hey, Bernie, we've taken you over time. You can send us a bill for the extra. And we really appreciate it. And you don't like to talk Cardinal baseball, do you?
I said to you on my show the other day, Lauren, it's like, look, they're kind of dull on the field this year, but, man, they are not dull in terms of all the stuff going on. There's always something going on. There's a lot to talk about.
All right. We'll be talking to you a little later. Thank you.
Take care.
We'll see you. Bernie Miklas from St. Louis, 101sports.com, with us here with some baseball conversation. It is 10:28 on Saturday's Sports Talk with Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly. We'll take a break here at the bottom of the hour. We come back, we'll turn our attention to Illinois football and visit with Joey Bosse, the strength and conditioning coach for the Fighting Illini. Back with more after this.
Early Monday morning on DWS, we'll have live coverage of President Donald Trump's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. That'll be in the 4 a.m. hour Monday here on DWS.
It is 10:33 on WDWS, Saturday Sports Talk with Lauren Tate. I'm Steve Kelly. Joey Bose with us in year number three on the staff as strength and conditioning coach. A lot of the coaches have told us you spend more time with the guys this time of year than anybody. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, yeah. I'm with the guys every day. We spend a lot of time together, a lot of development time, and we're having a great summer so far.
Talk about some of the time you spend together. What gets done there?
You know, we break it up. We train Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Two of those days are speed and agility emphasis on the field. And then we come in and it's a leg emphasis in the weight room. And then the other 2 days are conditioning emphasis on the field. And we come in and we lift our upper bodies. And we do that in three groups throughout the day, split up by really their class schedule. But we do keep one group of just all those incoming freshmen. They stay together for the whole summer.
What have you seen that may be different from year three back to year two and even year one?
Yeah, our guys are just able to handle more stuff. You know, they know the routine of how we're going to train and what's expected from them when they come in this room and on the field with us. And we've made a lot of progress with how young we were last year. Those guys didn't get a great opportunity to get development time during the season because they were all playing so much. So really in the off season, all those young freshmen who played was tremendous time for them to develop. And then in through the summer, we've made really good progress.
Well, you know, I always like to talk about individuals. And before I get into the varsity, did you have any hint that you would be playing, have 16 freshman starters and 22 freshmen that would be playing? And would that have been a shock to you if sitting here a year ago, if I'd have said that?
You know, I expected a lot of those young guys to come in and compete. That number 22 is high, right? At any school, usually you'd have, you know, four or five true freshmen playing a significant role.
Is that what it's going to be this year?
I would imagine we're going to have a lot of young guys playing. We brought in, you know, some of those skill guys that we brought in, I really like the first impression of those guys after 5 weeks of training with them. They can run. They can run, and if you can run, you can play. So I think a lot of those guys are going to push, especially in the defensive backfield and wide receiver position. I think we're going to see a lot of young guys play.
Okay, let's talk about the big tackles on offense. Last year, Boyd and Lowe came in, and I remember weights 340, 350, you know, at one time. Now they're down in the 310 area, I believe, right now. Tell me where you, you know, what does this mean for them to drop that kind of weight?
They're moving a lot better. You know, they're a lot more able to hold up to things. You know, conditioning-wise, they're able to stay in workouts. And last year they were so, I don't want to say, you know, they were too heavy. They were too heavy. At 360, at 350, they were too heavy to hold up for the conditioning aspect of what we were asking them to do. So this year we really put an emphasis on getting their weight down. Vidarian weighed in this week. He's 312 and Larry Boyd was 305 yesterday. So those guys have done a tremendous job, not only in the training aspect of things, but with their nutrition, their diet, taking care of themselves. And I look for that to transfer big time on the field.
How much different is Lowe now that he missed the beginning of a football season even? I mean, he didn't have the training that anybody else had, and yet he, by the third or fourth game, there he was playing.
Yeah, and Vidarian's had one of the best off seasons of anybody on the team. He's made tremendous strides, not only with his body weight, but with his strength. And he's gotten a lot stronger than he was this time last year, and I look for him to have a huge second year, you know, make a big jump from that first year to second year.
Have you got a goal in mind for each guy on the offensive line as far as weight goes, or is it an individual thing on how their body's put together and such?
Yeah, everyone's a little bit different. Some guys can carry a little more weight than other guys, but we give our guys goals and ranges that we want them in, and we monitor their body weight twice a week. Our nutrition staff, Sebastian, they do a tremendous job with the education part of it, and we are around these guys so much that we're able to, you know, see the weight come off, or if they start to put on weight, we're the first ones to see it on a weekly, daily basis.
Where do you place Vertus Brown and Avery, Calvin Avery, in terms of where they are as incoming freshmen? There's talk that they can compete in the defensive line. Are they in the same boat that maybe Lowe and some and the other freshmen were last year, the big ones?
You know, I both those guys are tremendously talented, and they do have the ability to help us this year. I think both of those guys are going to help us on the football field. Both of those guys, same thing as Larry and Vidarian. They're not used to this setting, this environment. The conditioning aspect for them is something they weren't used to. So they've done they've been here for 5 weeks now, 6 weeks. They've made big strides, but they need to continue to work on their body composition and their body weight to make sure that they're ready to go when September rolls around.
As strength and conditioning coach, what's your opinion of the new rule as far as redshirting goes, where a player could play up to four games and still possibly redshirt? Do you like that?
I do. I do. I think these guys came here to play football. They didn't come here to lift weights or run sprints. And it gives the coaching staff and everyone an opportunity to see those guys under the light. Some guys are great practice players, and then they get on the field on Saturday and they don't perform as well as you think they would. And then sometimes vice versa. Sometimes a guy gets in a game and, you know, for lack of a better term, he's a gamer. And so that ability to watch them play with live bullets is huge, I think, for the coaching staff.
Last year, as I recall, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I think you said that Hobbs was going to be better than we thought. I think you picked Paul Zuski out early. Who are you picking out early this year? It doesn't have to be a freshman, but who do you see making
big plays? I'll give you some freshmen because there's some freshmen I really like. Jartavius Martin, I think, is going to be a guy. You're going to call his name a lot in the defensive backfield. I like all those DBs that we brought in. You know, Dylan Wyatt, Delano Ware, Kirby Joseph, just to name a couple. Ron Harge, I think all those guys, they're going to get an opportunity to compete for a job. Kalen Tolson is a guy who's flashed at linebacker. I think he's going to be a guy who helps. Some of the walk-on players that we brought in, Mitch McNutt has made an impression on me and my staff. Jordan Holmes at wide receiver, a guy like Donnie Navarro, another walk-on wide receiver. I think these are guys that are going to help our football team and the depth of our football team.
Talking with Joey Bose, it would seem to me it would be more difficult to play early along either of the lines. Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, it's a physical game in there, and, you know, it's just different if you're 18 years old or 22 years old, right? The development between these 4 years for guys is the biggest thing. Sometimes when your skill players come in, speed's dominant, right? If they can run, they have a chance to play. It's so physical inside that a guy has to be pretty special to play up front early.
Do you clock these guys? I mean, when you're outside, do you run 40s, that sort of thing?
Yeah, we do a lot of speed work, a lot of change of direction.
You time them?
We do in the off season, and during the spring, at the end of the semester, we do run 40s and pro agility, and we have a little what we call a line nine combine. You know, it's fun for the players. It's something that they can set goals, and then it's good for us as a staff, too, to see the progression and is a guy getting faster? Is a guy getting stronger? Those sort of things.
Well, I heard that Dudek had really good times and also put on 10 pounds. He's a 200-pounder now, huh?
Yes. And Mike has always been a tremendous worker for us in the weight room. He's very gifted. He is very gifted. He is a high 4.3, 40-yard dash guy. He can run. He can change direction.
How many 4.3s do you have out there?
Not very many. There's not very many walking around anywhere, to be honest with you. And he is a special talent, and I look for him to have a huge year this year.
You played defensive back in the Big Ten at Wisconsin. Was it your goal to get back into the Big Ten in this kind of position?
Absolutely. I've always, we're coming out of California and playing at the University of Wisconsin. This league is special. I think it's the best football league in the country. And the fanfare, the athletes you see here, the physicality of this league. Yes, it's always been a dream of mine to coach in the Big Ten.
It wouldn't be appropriate for us to skip the quarterback position. Let's talk about the conditioning of Cam Thomas. Thomas and the freshman and the JC transfer. Who's in the best shape? Who looks the best to you from a physical standpoint?
You know what? They've all done really well. I'm intrigued to see these young freshmen when the pads are on, you know, when they're getting a rush at them, when they throw, we're not able to watch that. But as how they carry themselves, how they've worked this summer so far, I'm excited with some of the leadership qualities that these guys possess. They've all done a really good job. I think it's going to be a big-time competition come here in fall camp, and we'll see who comes out on top when September rolls around.
So what happens now from this point on until fall camp? We've got, what, about 3 weeks till that happens?
Yeah, we're making the last push here. So, you know, the conditioning emphasis is high. We're trying to get these young men ready to play for camp when the coaches come back. When it's time for practice, we want them to be ready to go through what the rigors of practice are going to be. Individual, 9-on-7, 7-on-7, to team, and then do that back-to-back-to-back days. So the conditioning emphasis is up right now. We're making a strong push. We'll end on July 27th. So we have finish up tomorrow. Then we have 2 weeks after this. They will get a little mini break. They'll get 4 or 5 days off to relax. And then we'll start camp up, I believe, on August 2nd.
Yeah, two guys that showed great promise, but really undersized, I thought. Dorsey at tight end and Gay at defensive end. How have they progressed from a physical standpoint?
Those two guys have done a good job as well. You know, Isaiah's, we're still trying to put some weight on Isaiah. He's a lean guy, but he's twitchy. He's an off-the-edge pass rush guy who can turn the corner and makes things happen in that aspect of his game. He's very, very strong lower half of his body. He's one of the better squatters on the team. Lewis Dorsey's also done a really good job. Lewis has pushed his conditioning this summer, and I look for him, both those guys to have a good year.
I heard one of the coaches say they'd like to see him at 250 at tight end where he could block the same way he can catch. That's a little ways to go yet, isn't it?
Yeah, and we never want to put bad weight on a player, especially a young guy, any guy. And so there's a progression in how we're going to try to pack weight on. We want to pack muscle on, not fat. And so we're not just going to pump calories. We want the lean mass to go up and the fat mass to come down. And so both these guys are gaining weight, but they're both doing it the right way.
Back to the lines, games of won and lost right there on the lines. Are you getting the offensive line and the defensive line at Illinois to Big Ten caliber, to where they could compete day in and day out against Big Ten teams? Because it's been a little bit down in previous years.
We are getting there. We're making strides. I can tell you from a strength perspective, 100%. We got to get more depth there, you know, and we're going to do that through recruiting. We're going to do that with developing some of these younger players. But we are making progress in those two areas.
Joey, appreciate your time. Always fun to talk football. It won't be long. We'll be talking it for real.
Yep, I'm excited. Thank you, guys.
Strength and conditioning coach Joey Bosse. One thing you learned from that, Lauren, if you can run, you can play.
Well, I'm impressed by that whole approach that they're taking. Because I don't know much about these defensive backs that they brought in. We never know much about defense. We didn't know much about Williams. We didn't know much about Hobbs or Adams last year where these guys came in, and all of a sudden you look out there and they're playing. DeGroote played a lot. So maybe they're going to get some help there. It sure sounds like, as far as Bosse is concerned, they are going to get help. I don't know anything about Martin. I don't know anything about Wyatt. We'll find out.
It is 10:47. You know, if you've been thinking recently about replacing the doors – on your home, you're already aware that the most important doors are the entry door to your home and the patio door. How about a trip to the Pella Window Store at 1001 North Country Fair Drive? That'll help clear up what really could be an overwhelming situation for you. Mike Mary and the Pella staff has been around here for a lot of years, 40 years. As a matter of fact, there are many choices for windows and doors. The Pella Window Store has 8 patio doors alone on display in their showroom. They can show you a whole bunch of other ones as well. They will not only help you decide what's best for you, they'll stand by them with a limited lifetime warranty. It's really one-stop shopping at the Pella Window Store. You find the products, talk about the installation and financing options as well. Windows and door shopping is not something you'll be doing very often, so you want to get it right. Do your research, set your budget, work with the folks at the Pella Window Store, then show off your new windows or doors to your family and friends. 1001 North Country Fair Drive in Champaign is the Champaign location for Illini Pella. Open until noon today, so you've got a little bit of time yet if you're out running around on this, what has been a rainy Saturday morning. Their Monday through Friday hours are 8 to 5. They also have stores in Danville, Decatur, and Bloomington. Check them out online at pellaofchampaign.com for Illini Pella, the Pella Window Store. 10:48, we'll take a break and be back with more Saturday Sports Talk in just a moment.
Early Monday morning on DWS, we'll have live coverage of President Donald Trump's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. That'll be in the 4 a.m. hour Monday here on DWS.
Got about 10 minutes left on Saturday's Sports Talk. If you want to join us, jump in. 356-9397 is the phone number. We started off talking tennis, obviously, with Kevin Anderson into the Wimbledon finals against Novak Djokovic. That'll be tomorrow. By the way, there is a watch party at Houlihan's. If you want to join in with some other Illini fans, I'd say get over there early.
Yeah, before 8 o'clock.
And that'll be certainly fun to watch. And we'll see if Kevin Anderson's got any legs left after that marathon 6 hour and 36 minute win yesterday over John Isner. And that was a battle of giants, literally. It was a momentous battle of guys that one was 6'8", one was 6'10", and that really changes the way tennis is played.
I don't know how many different things I did during the course of that match.
I left home twice.
I know.
I saw you at the golf course.
I know it. I came back, and I was watching it, then went out the golf course, and I hit some balls, and then I came back and watched it again. And oh, man.
I went back home for lunch after being at the golf course for a little bit. I said, well, I'll go watch have lunch and watch the fifth set, which was just starting. And 3 hours later, finally concluded. Mike Small is on the golf course up in northern Illinois. We'll see if they're having any weather issues. They haven't so far. Small has a birdie so far today. He's 9 under par. This is the Players' Championship on the Senior Tour, the Champions Tour. The lead is at 13 under par. Small is minus 9, so he's right in there, tied for 12th.
He keeps playing like this, he's going to get a lot of opportunities on that Senior Tour.
He really is.
He's going to become one of the main guys.
We talked to some Illinois football just a moment ago with Joey Bosse, and the Big Ten Football Media Day is coming up in less than 2 weeks now in Chicago. That's kind of for people that cover football, that's kind of the end of summer.
Yes, it is.
Every year when that happens.
It's so early, though, Steve, before football starts, that by the time you have all that information, and then it all changes in the coming weeks, because then you have practice and all kinds of adjustments are made, and this guy got hurt, and this guy moves up, and this, it's just so hard to, I think it's really valuable. I've been going to the thing for like 50 years, and, it's important, and yet I always found myself getting all this information and writing a column and then realizing it's too early to write all these football columns in July.
And if you save save your notes, in my case, save your tape.
And eventually threw them away.
It gets outdated pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Because the coaches haven't seen their teams yet. Speaking of coaches and teams, there are some coaches, including Ron Zook, in town this weekend, and former players from the 2007 team that beat Ohio State in Columbus when they were number one, went on to play in the Rose Bowl. Some of those guys are in town. And if you watched on the BTN this week, they replayed that game with Jay Lehman. And
Juice?
Juice was there too, but so was James Laurinaitis from Ohio State.
And another linebacker.
It was he and Jay that kind of recapped the game, and they also had Juice Williams there as well. It was kind of fun to watch because
you know what it was, and I'll always remember the 8 minute march at the end of the game, which preserved the victory, and the four touchdown passes by Juice. He didn't have a lot of completions in that game, but he had four TD passes, which that counted for the touchdowns.
And you know who didn't have a great game, and I'm sure it was Ohio State's game plan, it was Rashard Mendenhall.
Mm-hmm. But Juice was keeping the ball late in the ball game, and they evidently found a weakness in the Ohio State defensive line late in that ball game, because he kept making those third down plays, and they were running right through the middle or right off tackle.
He kept having to do a sales job on Ron Zook to go for it from a time or two in that drive as well. That game went down and back, and everybody remembers how that came out. Rose Bowl didn't come out quite as well, but a lot of those guys in town to visit with each other and stay in touch 10 years later. Kind of hard to believe that, isn't it?
I don't know. It seems like longer to me.
Does it? I have a hard time over the years. You're probably better than this than me, but I'll tell you who's amazing is Matt Daniels. You could talk about a game, and he'll tell you what year it was for sure. And I have a hard time separating
those,
the years.
It's those young memories. See, you're getting all this stuff is crowding the other stuff out.
So I have to, when I think about the upcoming football season and I think of where we're going, and I always think of radio booths and press boxes, and I have to stop and think, now, what's that one like? After a while, they start to all look alike. 10:55 is the time. We'll take one final break here on Saturday Sports Talk. We'll do that and be back with more after this.
Early Monday morning on DWS, we'll have live coverage of President Donald Trump's meeting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. That'll be in the 4 a.m. hour Monday here on DWS.
A couple of minutes before 11 o'clock, wrapping up the July the 14th edition of Saturday Sports Talk. Do you believe the month of July is halfway over already?
I can't.
We mentioned football, football media day coming up on the 23rd and 24th. The Illinois Day there in Chicago is on the 24th.
I tell you one thing, it's been a good July for the farmers. They got just enough rain. If you watch, look at that corn and beans out there driving around through the country. My goodness, it's just busting out of the ground, isn't it?
Is that a farmer's term?
Yeah.
Busting out of the ground?
Busting out of the ground. Yep, that's a farmer's term.
Okay. Your mission is to use that in a column one of these days.
That's right.
What do you got coming up in a column maybe tomorrow?
Oh, I don't know if I'm going to write one tomorrow. Cubs and Cardinals. How about that?
Okay.
Cardinals.
There's your tease for tomorrow's Lauren Tate.
I got to do that once in the summer. I got to get it in before it's over. We're going to wait till after that Cubs, eight games against the Cubs coming up with the Cardinals. They might be looking for – they might be a seller, Steve, before it's over.
I got a feeling it won't be your only Cubs-Cardinal column of the summer. There's still time, and there's still some what we call dog days before everything gets going. But football will be coming soon with Football Media Day the 23rd and 4th. Hasn't been announced yet, but I'm guessing the Illinois contingent, besides Lovie Smith, will include Nick Allegretti, Mike Dudek, maybe a guy like Jamal Milan.
That's it.
We'll see how that plays out, and those team members will be announced coming up soon. Mr. Tate, appreciate your time.
All right.
Talk to you next week. Thanks to Brad Sturdy from Orange and Blue News, Aaron Jordan from the Illini basketball team. Illini tennis coach Brad Dancer joins us from Wimbledon, England. Bernie Miklas from St. Louis spent about 30 minutes with us, and we talked Illinois football with strength and conditioning coach Joey Bose. Appreciate you listening. WDWS, Champaign, Urbana. Thanks to Blake Landa for his help on the program, and we'll talk to you again soon. Have a good weekend, everybody. See ya. And go Kevin Anderson. Don't forget that watch party tomorrow, 8 a.m. at Houlihan's if you're interested. See you, folks.